empty husk of the battlecruiser Frodo bounced off the shields of the Arwen, causing them to ripple like water after a stone had been skipped off its surface. The Frodo rolled before gently hitting the shield again. The Arwen slowed to a crawl, allowing the dead wreck the space it needed to tumble into the dense debris field that used to be the Oleum Task Force. Captain Marjorie Cook grabbed the side of her command chair as the Frodo struck the ship's protective shields one last time. The deep bass sound of the collision echoed through the ship a few more times before fading into silence. She turned to her second-in-command and asked, "Kel, can you find any survivors?" He shook his head. "No, sir. The Jurassic destroyed everything." Professor Richter spoke up. "We don't know they did this. Who else could it have been?" Kel yelled, snapping his head to face Professor Richter. The two stared at each other, Kel's face tight with anger. His fist balled so tight the vein on the top of his palms pulsated. "Calm down, Commander. Focus on your job. I agree with the professor. We don't know what happened here, and I'm not going to make any guesses." "Yes, sir," Kel replied. There was great agitation in his walk as he headed to the communication officer station. He placed his hands on the back of the chair, his grip denting the fabric. "Any replies from Oleum?" "No, sir. I'll keep trying." Marjorie tried to figure the timeline. The comet came out of wormhole space 3 weeks before they did. The Oleum fleet would have met them. Something happened which destroyed the fleet, and then the Arwen arrived. It would take a week to quickly organize another fleet to investigate. Not knowing if Admiral Nars sent out a distress call during the attack, she had no idea when the next fleet might arrive, but she figured she had time to figure out what was going on. Most of the destroyed ships looked as if they had been carved into many pieces. The weapon used was a tight energy beam. Marjorie examined the sensor data as it filtered through her computer. She found radiation that would match the signature of a gamma gun. The power to focus gamma radiation tight enough to slice through the hull of a battlecruiser was more than any corpse ship could produce. An energy source as large as the comet's could do it. She needed more information, as she needed it now. "Professor Richter, Kel, I want you two to gather all the information you have and meet me in the conference room in 20 minutes. Helm, keep on course to Oleum, slow and steady. Communications, continue to try and contact the Oleum president." "Captain," Kel said, "Fran might be useful in this meeting as well." "Fine, bring her too." Marjorie stood from her chair and stepped down. She, Kel, and Professor Richter stepped into the elevator. No one said a word. When the elevator stopped, Kel stepped off, leaving Professor Richter alone with Marjorie. The professor cleared his throat before talking. "Marjorie, I know that you think it was a Jurassic, but I can assure you..." She cut him off with a look. "I can't believe they attacked either, but the evidence is overwhelming. I don't want to draw any conclusions until I have solid fact, but..." He cut her off this time. "But it doesn't look good. Surely you know things are never this cut and dry." The elevator door opened and she stepped out into the hallway and toward the conference room. "Aren't you going to get your stuff?" "No need. I have it all in my head." "We all can't be blessed with photographic memory, so if you don't mind, I'd like to look over the reports." He didn't respond and kept a respectful distance from her as they entered the conference room. On a small computer, she pulled up the report and read it. The aliens inside the comet were known as the Jassic. The Jassic were at one time the dominant race of the planet Oleum. They had reached scientific heights greater than any race the Earth Alliance had ever encountered. However, they had short lifespans and long gestation periods. Because of that, most Jassic wanted to spend their short lives contributing to the betterment of Oleum. They felt they needed helpers to do the day-to-day things, so they modified the genes of the Oleum, a race that were intelligent enough to develop a common language and culture to make them smarter. Through either freak mutation or a purposeful manipulation, Miriam was born. Miriam was an Oleum-Jassic hybrid who was just as smart as a Jassic. He led his race in a rebellion that killed millions on both sides. The Oleum had an advantage of higher numbers, and even though the Jassic had greater firepower, they lost the war of attrition. It was decided to leave in a spaceship that they had disguised as a comet. The plan seemed to be to return in 1,000 years when Miriam and all his deeds had been forgotten. While in wormhole space, a sun close to the system of Regal went supernova and forced the comet out into real space. The computer, damaged from the supernova, assumed the planet of Regal was Oleum and made its way toward the system. The Regals asked the Earth Alliance for help in stopping the threat. They sent the Arwen to help. Once in the system, it didn't take Professor Richter and his team long to realize the true nature of the comet. It was Professor Richter who figured out the comet would move once it realized it was on a collision course with the planet. It was also Professor Richter who spent the last 3 months studying everything he downloaded from the ship's computer. At the moment, the professor was the leading authority on the JASSIC, something he wouldn't hesitate to tell anyone who asked. Marjorie looked up from her computer to see Professor Richter staring at her intently. "Something I can help you with, Theo?"
"Yes, I think until this is sorted out, we shouldn't call each other by our first names."
"Oh?" she asked. This didn't seem to be the time to worry about that, she thought.
"Yes, it might set a bad example to the crew. I don't mind if we exchange names in private, Marjorie."
He smiled. "But in public, I will acknowledge you as Captain Cook, and you call me Professor Richter. After all, you are the only one I allow to call me Theo."
"Okay, Theo."
It was her turn to smile. "You have yourself a deal." The door opened. Kel and Fran walked in with serious looks on their faces.
"I filled Fran in on the situation."
Fran sat down, her eyes deep in grief and disbelief.
"The entire fleet? How many people is that?"
"Too many," Kel replied, somber.
"I agree, too many," Marjorie said. "From now on, we need to figure out what happened. I'm sure another fleet is on its way. We need to give them as much information as we can."
"Captain," Kel said, "I suggest we go to Red Alert. I can get a boarding party ready within an hour, and..."
"And what, Commander?" Professor Richter asked.
"Go in with guns blazing?"
"That's exactly what we need to do. They attacked us. That's an act of war."
Captain Cook slammed her hand on the table, causing everyone to jump.
"You will both shut up, Kel. I agree. We're going to Red Alert. Professor, I agree with you as well. No hostile actions for now."
Kel folded his arms in frustration. Captain Cook had never seen her first officer like this before. It took a lot for him to lose his cool.
"What are we going to do about Oleum?" she asked.
"Wait until they contact us," Kel said. "I'm sure they'll tell us what happened."
"Can we trust their information?" Professor Richter asked.
"Why shouldn't we?" Captain Cook replied.
"How do we know they didn't attack first?"
"That seems highly unlikely," Kel said.
"Why? These people are their sworn enemies. It would be wrong for us not to think they could at least react with some hostility."
"I agree with Kel," Captain Cook said. "Even if they had hostile intent, our fleet wouldn't let them attack."
Professor Richter leaned back in his chair and grinned.
"Are we really that arrogant?"
All three turned to look at him. He continued.
"The Oleum are our friends, sure, but we now know they are capable of misleading us, or at least not telling us all that we need to know. Before this comet, we thought they were the only intelligent species, and now we find out they chased off the other one? We don't know what they'll do when they confront it with the race they thought they destroyed. How would we react if suddenly we found out our greatest demons were returning?"
"We'd want to destroy them," Fran, who had been quiet the entire time, replied.
Captain Cook sighed.
"I don't need to remind you, we don't know what happened here, and I will not jump to any conclusions until we do."
"What are your orders?" Kel asked.
"We'll continue on this course to Oleum at top speed. We'll continue to try to hail both Oleum and the JASSIC until they answer all our hails or our reinforcements arrive."
The communication panel in front of Marjorie beat.
"Captain, this is the bridge. We just picked up a distress call from the Milgard. We did a quick scan and found some life signs."
"Set a course for the Milgard."
She looked at Kel. "Commander, get a team together and head to that ship. I can only hope Admiral Narin survives and he has some of the answers we're looking for."
Marjorie felt the tension ebbing from Kel's body like heat from a fire. He walked a few steps ahead of her, his body language tight and closed.
"Commander, is everything okay?"
He slowed down to let her catch up. When she did, he looked down at her.
"I'll be fine."
"That's not what I asked. You're not only my first officer, you're also my friend. You can talk to me."
"I know," he replied coldly. "When I have something to talk to you about, I'll let you know. Now, Captain, if you'll excuse me, I have to get a boarding party ready."
He hurried down the hallway where he turned a corner and disappeared. Marjorie stood in the hallway trying to figure out her first officer when Fran briskly walked past.
"Dr. Mercury, can I have a word with you?"
She turned and quickly said,
"I don't know what's wrong with Kel, I'm sorry."
Marjorie seemed a bit taken back.
"But you noticed it too?"
"I did. He was fine up until he found out about the fleet."
"Could you talk to him, find out what's wrong?"
Fran lowered her head and folded her arms across her chest.
"Captain, I don't mean this in a bad way, but if I do find out, I'm not sure I have the right to tell you."
Marjorie considered this for a moment.
I agree. Things said between two lovers should be kept there. But if you do get him to talk, be sure to remind him of his duty. I don't think that will ever be a problem with him. May I go now?
Marjorie dismissed her with a nod, then headed for the elevator that would take her to the bridge. Professor Richter stood in front of the door, waiting for her.
Captain, I would like permission to observe from the bridge.
Fine, she replied. Her insight might come in handy.
It usually does, he replied.
I noticed your first officer seems to have a bit of a chip on his shoulder.
He'll be fine, she replied, and left the conversation at that.
The elevator opened and she walked onto the bridge. Professor Richter walked over to Kel's station and took a seat.
Kel, can you hear me?
Captain Cook asked.
Yes, sir. We're almost ready to leave.
I want constant contact. Do you understand?
Understood. I've got my crew ready and we're heading over. Commander Lipton out.
Pieces from thousands of ships floated in the weightlessness of space. Some of the smaller specks seemed to be orbiting the larger fragments. It would have been a beautiful sight without the knowledge that all of it at one time was a ship, which housed thousands of men and women. Kel did his best to avoid the larger pieces and concentrated on the burnt-out shell of the flagship. The Milgard, a cousin class of the Arwen, was much larger than his battlecruiser. Like all the other ships, the Milgard looked as if it had been carved with a very sharp knife. The closer Kel inspected, the more he noticed how clean the cuts were. As the sections tumbled in the total weightlessness, he was able to catch a glance of the decks that were exposed. It reminded him of the time his father took him to a shipyard. The prefabricated sections were lined up next to each other, waiting to be attached to the mammoth hulls of the ships they were designed for.
Commander, Captain Cook said, our sensors tell us the life signs are growing weaker. Roger, Kel said in a robotic tone.
He eased the throttle forward in an effort to pick up speed when something large slammed into the shields and bounced off. Then another object. Then a third skidded off the force field. As he approached the section, he spotted several objects floating around it. Objects that did not look like metal and, upon further inspection, he discovered they were bodies. Human bodies that had been floating in space for weeks.
Captain, I found bodies. Most seemed to have gathered around the hull, probably being affected by its gravity field.
There was a long pause. Then Captain Cook replied,
Acknowledged.
Kel slowed down to avoid damaging the bodies that he would inevitably hit. A set of powerful lights from his shuttle bounced off the shining, silver surface of the Milgard's broken hull. He eased up a bit and slowly came to a complete stop. The misshapen slag of metal rolled past his window. He studied it. Wires and pipes dangled out like roots from a tree. There were no lights in the few windows he could see, and he wondered if the Arwen's readings were wrong. After careful inspection, he found a door and decided it would be the best place to dock.
I'm going to dock now, Captain. I don't see anything that would indicate life, but I'm still holding out hope.
Copy that. Be careful, Commander. He waited until the door passed by his window again before maneuvering the shuttle next to it. With the help of his computer, he managed to line the door up to the exit ramp in the back. Two men waited for his orders.
I found a door, extending the shields out so that we can enter the ship. Keep your force field suit ready just in case we run into a section with no air. We don't know what to expect once we get over there.
One of his men walked over to the computer and activated the shield control. The computer graphic on the screen verified the shields were now in place. Kel walked over to the door and opened it. Air from the shuttle whooshed past him as it filled the vacuum. He stepped out of the shuttle and floated over to the door. He pounded on it with his fist.
This is Commander Kel Lipton of the battlecruiser Arwen. Is anyone alive in there?
He waited a few seconds before pounding again. He pulled out his small communicator and spoke into it.
Captain, I'm not getting any answer.
Find a way in there. Kel pushed off the door, floated to the shuttle, and, with the help of the artificial gravity field it created, landed on his feet. He pulled out his gun.
I'm setting the gun to torch. That should slice the door open.
He pointed the gun and pulled the trigger. An invisible beam of high energy hit the door. A small, thin section melted under its power, and Kel slowly moved it around the outer edge. Within moments, the door floated in front of him. Behind it was a darkened ship. He pulled out a flashlight from his belt and shined it into the room. Furniture and other debris floated around.
Captain, we're going to head in now. I don't see any indication they have gravity, and I still don't see any lights.
Kel and the two other men floated across the force field and into the darkened room. The quiet unnerved him. A ship should never be quiet.
There should always be a soft hum of the engine, the rhythm of human feet walking down the hall, the sound of people talking. He waved his men forward, then pushed off the wall toward the door. He pounded on the door again, and before he could say anything, he heard a hoarse, barely audible reply of, "Help me!" He pulled the handle on the door, and it slowly swung open. He shined the light into the room. Three people floated amongst discarded food and water packets. It took Kel a moment to recognize they had managed to survive as long as they had because they were trapped in the galley, or what was left of the galley. They probably would have gone through the fresh food quickly. Then, they would have to go through the powdered food, which, without any food processor, would have tasted horrible. "I found three survivors. They look rather weak, but alive." He turned to one of his men. "Take them back to the shuttle and get them to the Arwen right away. I'm going to continue to search the ship." They nodded and floated over to the weakened people. One of the women looked at him and said, "Thank you." Kel nodded and watched as his men carried the survivors out and toward the shuttle. "I'm going to keep looking around," he said. "I'll be back in a few minutes." His men walked out of the door and quickly out of sight. The room had enough air for life support, so he deactivated his force field. The smell of human waste, body odor, and spoiled meat assaulted his nose. He held his arm over his nostrils to try and block the smell, but it did little good. He walked over to another door and opened it, then waved his light into the darkened area. It looked like one of the main hallways, the end of which was too far away for his light to reach. He couldn't enter it. He needed to get back to the shuttle. "She could be in here," he thought before yelling. "Rachel, are you there? Rachel, please, tell me you're here." He waited, straining to hear something. The only reply he heard was the section moaning in protest of its current situation. He continued to float through the rooms, shoving drifting debris out of his way, looking in the dark corners. He found bodies that had died a long time ago. All that seemed left were the ghosts of the Milgard crew. He closed his eyes and willed the tears away. "Captain Cook, this is Commander Lipton. The rest of the ship is empty. I found some bodies, but nothing else." Lipton out. Kel walked into his room, took off his shirt, and threw it onto the bed in frustration. Walking over to a chest at the foot of his bed, he paused, not sure if he wanted to open it. Kel sighed and gathered his inner strength before opening the chest. He pulled out a small memory chip and reader. He turned the reader on, then placed the chip inside. The image of a smiling, dark-haired, dark-skinned woman appeared. This hologram was taken a few years ago, and he knew Rachel had changed. He had no new holograms of her, and knew nothing of what her life was like now. He cycled through to the new image. She was younger and wore a yellow dress that he bought for her before leaving for the Arwen. On her head was a brown hat he had gotten to help protect her head from the harmful radiation that Mars' thin atmosphere couldn't protect her from. "Hello, big brother, and happy birthday! I thought you'd like to see me wearing the dress that you got me." She did a little pirouette, which caused the bottom of the dress to resemble the bottom of a bell. The lower gravity of Mars caused it to keep the shape. She continued to talk as it slowly fell back into place. "Mom and Dad are doing okay. Expect a hologram from them shortly. I know they're getting one ready. We really miss you here on Mars and hope you get some time off soon. Don't be a stranger, okay?" The hologram faded and he moved on to the next one. The tears formed as he watched her get younger and younger the further back he went. He paused at his favorite hologram of her. A younger version of him cradled a frail infant in his arms. He looked at the person holding the camera. "She's so light," he said. The deep voice of his father replied, "She'll grow faster than you know." The younger Kel looked back at a baby Rachel. He whispered something into her ear. He looked back at the camera, smiling. "What did you say to her?" "That's between me and her, Dad." Kel turned the hologram off and put the device into his pocket. He remembered what he told her that day, what he always told her when she was sad or scared. He would always tell her she never had to worry about anything because her big brother would take care of her. Most of the time, she didn't need his help. She was a strong girl, determined not to take anything from any bully. She was a protector of the schoolyard, keeping those too meek to defend themselves safe when people would try to keep them down. He often felt he was protecting the bullies from her, not the other way around. It helped her become a strong woman, someone who would become the perfect officer when the time came. There's a soft knocking on the door. "Kel, can I come in?" "Yeah," he replied, his voice trying to hold back the emotions he felt in his gut. Fran opened the door, walked in, and sat next to him on the bed. She said no words and instead put her arm around him to hold him close to her body.
She would have been Earth 26 years, he said.
Your sister?
She asked.
Yeah,
he replied. Last I heard, she was a gunner on the Milgard.
How long ago was that?
About a year ago. She said she loved being on the flagship of the corpse and never wanted to leave.
Is it possible she got transferred?
He nodded in the negative. No. Even if she had asked for a transfer, it would have taken a year for it to go through. I was really hoping she was in the galley or had somehow gotten trapped in an air pocket, but... He trailed off.
Are you going to tell Captain Cook?
No, I can't. He replied.
Why not?
If she knows I have a personal involvement in this, she'll tell me to stand down. I can't have that. I need to know what happened, and I need to be the one who finds out. If those damn Jacek did this, then I want to be a part of that payback.
Kel, this is going to affect your judgment. You should.
He jumped from the bed and turned to look at her. I know you're trying to help, but please, don't tell me how to deal with the death of my sister.
But Kel...
Nothing, Fran. But nothing. Please, get out. I need to write up my report to the captain.
Fran's heartbreak didn't hide on her face as she stood from the bed to leave. She paused at the door as if wanting to say something.
She said nothing as she walked out of the room.